pre-recorded from Joe's mom's basement. It's a rewind episode of the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey everyone, I'm Griffin the intern, or as the ladies in my fourth period call me, the Finturn. I made a New Year's resolution to never visit the basement again, but hey, it's February, and Joe's mom said there was ice cream here. I had no idea ice cream from 1984 could last this long. I'm not touching it, but hey, at least it's a nice science experiment. Today I looked behind the canned peaches and found Stacking Benjamin's episode 296, Paying for College with High School Micro Scholarships, where guest Preston Silverman shares a unique idea. What if a high schooler could win some money for college by showing promise during the high school years? He'll explain, but don't worry if this topic isn't relevant to you because there's much more on this one. JD Roth from Moneyboss.com sits in as a co-host for OG, and he helps answer the questions about the volatile market, saving half of your income, and electric toothbrushes. That'll be interesting. Remember to disregard any investment info or giveaways mentioned. This episode was originally released just over a year ago on Tuesday, January 19th, 2016. Enjoy!
Boys, I've told you 100 times, no podcasting until you eat all your peas.
Live from the card table next to the water heater, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. OG's on the road this week, so we welcome from Moneyboss.com, special co-host JD Roth, CEO of micro scholarship firm Raise.me, Preston Silverman. Plus, should you sell all your investments and go to cash? And how to save 50% of your income. And here they are, one guy who likes to get rich slowly, and the other guy who, well, is named Joe. Joe Salcihi and J.D. Roth.
Hey, halfway through the week, everybody. Welcome back to another Stacking Benjamins episode. And it's amazing. Here at the card table is a guy that I don't recognize much. What the hell are you doing here, J.D. Roth?
Wait, you don't recognize me?
Well, you're not OG. I mean, OG sits across usually with a bathrobe and a bag over his head.
Oh,
and I can see your face.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. For better or worse.
No, it's for much better. So how's it going, man?
Good, good. As you know, I've been traveling around the U.S. and I'm pit stopped in Savannah, Georgia for a while.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah, it's wonderful. Spanish moss dripping from the trees. And the oaks don't lose their leaves. We don't have these kind of oaks in Oregon. They're live oaks. That's what they call them.
I don't understand these parts. Sounds like what you're saying.
I'm looking out. The trees have leaves outside my window. What's up with that?
I went to school in Charleston, South Carolina. You're going to leave before it gets hot as hell, aren't you?
Yes. Rumor has it that summers here are just brutal.
You do not want to be there. I was so happy the first week of June when I'm kissing it goodbye. Like, see you in September.
Yeah, we got here in late September, and even then it was hot. You know, there were a couple of days around Christmas where it was just sticky. I went for a walk. I came back. I was dripping wet.
You know what else is hot, JD? Everybody that goes to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money.
That's
bam. I nailed that one because, as everybody knows, if you've listened to the show, that Nick Clements and the gang, they will hook you up on better checking accounts, savings accounts, and debt options. If you're trying to refinance your debt, get lower interest rates on things, go to the place where 92% of all of the things available in finance land are there. How about that, JD? 92%.
Nice. That's a pretty precise number, too.
Well, as an example, NerdWallet, 65%. How about that? Yeah. So they're kicking NerdWallet's butt. Head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. I'm sure Nick Clements over there just is happy I'm picking a fight with NerdWallet on his behalf. And also, if you have great credit, head to stackybenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. They are the leader of marketplace lending, especially when it comes to student loan refinances. So if you're one of those people that has a lot of student debt, but you've done a great job of paying down your debt, why not do it at a lower interest rate? stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. And I'll tell you what, this is cool, JD. People get 100 smackaroonies. They get a nice Benjamin if they go through our link. How about that?
That's excellent. What is marketplace lending?
You know, the peer-to-peer lending. So what SoFi has is on one end, they got these investors. They're putting money in and then they loan it to you. How about that? Right. You want to take out a big fat loan through SoFi and help my cause?
No, I want to put the money in and get a return.
I know. How about that? Yeah, they get you both ways. It's kind of like Phil Town, who'll be on the show soon, said. Phil actually said once that, you know, you really want to be like a bank where you're not worried about making a ton of money on one deal. You just make money on every deal.
Yeah, lots of little deal.
And that's where SoFi is. StackingBenjamins.com/SOFI. So Preston Silverman's here, CEO of Raise.me. These two people, Bill and Melinda Gates, are you familiar with them?
Bill and Melinda Gates. God, it rings a bell.
I know. Isn't that weird? They back this thing, whoever they are. They back Raise.me. So we'll have Preston on talking about getting high schoolers interested in college by giving them little scholarships for doing good things. How about that? That'll be cool.
That's awesome.
Hey, by the way, one thing I didn't do at the start, you are now the money boss. And we did not.
That's right. I'm the money boss.
I know. We'll talk about that later. But so tell everybody about the money boss.
Well, Money Boss, you know, for a long time, I wrote about personal finance at a site called Get Rich Slowly.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, I know. Nobody has. And then I went on and I wrote for Entrepreneur Magazine. I wrote a book. I wrote a course. And I thought I would retire from personal finance. I thought I was done with it. But, you know, I just can't stay away. I realized I have a lot more to say. And I wanted to talk to people who are more interested in financial independence. I'm still talking to people who are trying to get out of debt and figure things out at the basic level. But I want to talk to people who are more interested in like advanced personal finance. So Money Boss is all about helping people treat their personal finances like they're managing a business, I guess.
It is way cool. How'd you come up with the name Money Boss?
Well, everything else was taken. So one of the hard things when starting a new blog is finding a URL that's available. And you know what? Money Boss was taken too. I had to fork over a lot of money for that. But I was asking for ideas on Facebook and one of my readers said, I like Money Boss. And I said, I like Money Boss too. And so went and tracked it down, paid the exorbitant fee, and there you go.
Somebody just held you hostage.
Well, you know, these domain, I don't even know what to call
squatters.
Them.
Squatters.
Yeah. But, you know, I legitimized the business by continuing to buy domains from them. So I can't complain too
Way
much.
To go, man. Way to go. Keep that alive. But let's do this. We got some headlines because we got Preston Silverman waiting behind that.
Hello, darlings. And now, it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our first headline, JD, comes to us by way of MarketWatch. This is written by Sue Chang. Bearish JP Morgan says, sell stocks on any rally. For the first time in 7 years, the advice moves away from buying the dips. Also, since I picked this headline, RBS, the big European bank, has told their clients, get out, right? So we got all these people, JD, telling us to get out. What do you think of that?
I don't know. I mean, I'm one of these people who believes you can't really time the market. And what's the point? Especially for most of us who are young and we're in the wealth accumulation phase of our life, we should be putting money in regardless of what the market's doing, in my opinion.
Yeah, but let's say that you're somebody who's in your, I mean, you and I are late 40s, right? But let's say I'm somebody who's 60 and I'm working for the man and I want to make sure I get out of there by 62.
Yep. Well, you know what? If you're older, in general, the advice is to have rebalanced your portfolio or to have a portfolio where your asset allocation isn't so heavily in stocks that it's going to make that big of a difference if there is a decline, right? I mean, you're supposed to have money in bonds or cash or whatever so that if there's some sort of crash or decline in the stock market, it's not going to kill you. So I think it's interesting to read headlines like this and it's very provocative, right? But I wonder if there's not some sort of self-fulfilling prophecy going on too. If all these people say, oh yeah, the stock market's going to go down, the stock market's go down. Maybe they kind of cause it.
Or on the other side, you know, there's the other thing, which in my career, when I was a financial advisor, the market always finds a way to disappoint the largest number of people, right? So you're going to have all these people that sell and nothing's going to happen, right?
Yeah. And that's the way it usually goes. I've read through this article and there's all these reasons the analysts say that the market's going to decline. But the truth is nobody knows what makes the market do anything except for very rare circumstances. Well, and so they're just guessing.
That's what I thought. Weakening oil price. They talk about, you know, how the oil price has been weakening forever. I mean, okay, we had a market malaise lately, but I don't think, is there anything different than we had with the last 6 months there?
You know what? For me, I take a very Warren Buffett approach. I'm a big fan of Warren Buffett. I'm not sure how you feel about him, but
absolutely.
I think he's great.
Yeah. And let's put it this way, JD. He's done slightly better than me.
Well, and me too. And he's got resources the average investor doesn't have. But all the same, his advice for the average investor, I think, is spot on. And he basically says, you know, just put all your money in there. Don't sell. Just buy. And you shouldn't be worrying about the market movement. You should pretty much ignore the movements of the market until you're nearing retirement.
I want to go back to older people because I love what you said there and I kind of want to highlight it, which is that if you're 60 and you're worried about this market, you screwed up because you had too much in stocks. You know, it's like touching the stove. Get away from that stove.
Yeah, and that's exactly what people went through in 2008, 2009, right? I mean, the value of their portfolios declined sharply because they were too heavily weighted in stocks near the end of the retirement. Now, for some people, I'm a pretty risk-tolerant guy, so it's okay for me to have a lot of money in stocks. It's not going to bug me. I know that if the stock market crumbles, well, I just don't go selling the stocks. Now I got to hang on to them for a while before I sell. So it doesn't worry me that much. But for some people, if you're risk-averse, man, you got to make sure you're asset allocation is right.
Right. I remember talking to people back in the day and they'd say, well, I'm a really conservative investor. I only have like 30% of my money in technology stocks. What are you talking about? It's horrible. Yeah. On the other end, though, if I'm a millennial, let's get back to that because you were talking about younger people listening to the show. Holy crap, what an opportunity. I would read this and I would be fired up because I haven't saved any money yet, right? And now I get to save it while it's taking one of the few downturns that we get. If I'm young, I'm hoping like heck it goes down some.
Yeah, absolutely right. And going back to Warren Buffett, he uses the hamburger analogy, right? He says, you got to pretend like you're buying a hamburger. What do you want? If you're going to be buying hamburgers for the next few years, you want the hamburgers to be cheap. And so I always like that analogy. When the stock market goes down, you're getting the hamburgers for cheap. That's what you want if you're younger.
See, you turn that into a J.D. Roth analogy by just substituting scotch.
Oh, yeah. Man, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't admit this, but I just asked him to bring me home a beer or wine or scotch because it's the new year. It's 2016. I'm trying not to drink as much, but I've been a good boy. I've been exercising. I deserve a little bit.
Well, and plus, dude, you spend a day in the basement with me. I mean, I'd have to drink after that too. Holy
cow. That's right. Smells like dirty socks down
here. It is. And this is a good day. I got to tell you, that's a good day because, you know, Doug's not been down here very much. Let's move on. Our next article comes to us from Investment News, the place where financial advisors go for their news. Found this interesting with David Bowie passing away last week, JD. Rock pioneer David Bowie was a financial innovator too. Bowie bonds paid off big for investors and rock star. Do you remember when he did this? When David Bowie, he was having financial trouble. So instead of selling his music to somebody else, like I think Michael Jackson actually did that, if I'm not.
Yeah, somebody sold the catalog.
Yeah. Instead, he didn't sell it. He just wrote bonds against his portfolio where he would pay the interest. And what? It was like a $55 million loan from investors. How cool was Bowie?
Well, he was awesome. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of his work, but he released a very critical album. It was 82 or 83, China Girl, Let's Dance, all those songs. Now, that was right when I was at junior high school. And so that was a very big part of my growing up.
Oh, baby, just you shut your mouth.
That's right. Oh, quite the racy video, too.
I know. That whole album. Remember, his look was so much different. Of course, his look was different forever. I thought it was also genius, him holding onto the album until just before he died.
Yeah, I thought that was great, too. You know, when I read this article, I was trying to remember where I heard about the Bowie bonds first. Because, like you, I read a lot of books and articles about personal finance. And somebody just used Bowie as an example in another book I was reading. So it must have been written a long time ago.
Yeah,
faith. I'm old. I can't remember where it was, but I wanted to have that as a counterpoint to say, hey, here's somebody else that mentioned it.
Yeah, it says, faced with the need to raise cash, Mr. Bowie considered selling his master recordings in 97. Instead, he securitized them, the rights to release his albums made between 69 and 90, taking out the $55 million loan. The bonds paid 7.8%. So here's what's cool for him. $55 million at 7.8% is probably a good deal for him. And at the same time, it was a great deal for his fans. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, what kind of band would it take for you to loan them money?
Well, I'd loan money to you too.
To me? You too. I get it. Oh, I thought you meant to me. It's like, well, thank you. Yes. So Bono.
Yeah, because I feel like there's a guaranteed return. But what other band? I don't know.
Springsteen?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that catalog's not going anywhere anytime soon.
But One Direction? I don't know.
I'd have to pass on moral grounds. Like if Bieber came calling. A pass. Sorry, dude. I am fresh out. I cannot help you.
But it depends on how high the interest rate is, too.
That's right. Might be able to forego my dislike of Justin Bieber if the interest rate's high enough. Of course, then I could consider myself to be Joe the Lounge Shark. Like, I'm really taking it to Justin Bieber, you know?
Ratchet up. Give me 15%.
I giggle every day. Bieber's getting it. The other thing I want to talk about here is this creativity when it comes to his debt. It's funny because you see these advertisements on television all the time for get out of debt. I don't see them as much as I used to. Get out of debt. And what it really was an attorney saying, what they were really saying was declare bankruptcy, right? And everybody who went through that process that I know said later, wish I wouldn't have done that, right? Wish I would have stuck it out, because it ends up being this horrible experience with everybody after a bankruptcy forever and ever and ever, no matter what they say.
My brother went through that. I mean, my younger brother has had a hell of a time with money. I mean, it's his own fault and he knows it. He owns it. Eventually, on a future episode of the Money Boss podcast, which does not exist yet, but I've recorded some episodes, I have a conversation with Tony about this. And he lost two homes to foreclosure. He had to declare bankruptcy. He tried to do some restructuring and stuff, and it was just a mess. It was a mess.
Oh, that's horrible. But there's always creative. I think people look for the easy way out, you know? I mean, they look for the easier way instead of applying some creativity. I remember I was having trouble in college paying my bills. And somebody said on the radio, somebody called in and said, I'm having trouble paying my bills. And I started listening because that's me. And the guy told the caller, what are you doing between midnight and 5 a.m.? And I thought, that's silly. And the person on the radio said, well, I'm sleeping. I'm asleep during that time. He goes, really? You're calling me because you're worried about paying your bills and you're sleeping. That seems very strange. So, you know, I became a paperboy for 6 months and it was a horrible job. It was rotten.
Did it help you pay your bills?
Absolutely. Yep. Got on top of it. After 6 months, I got a raise from my other crappy job that I was working, and I was able to not have to do that anymore.
Now, see, you made just what I think is a hugely important point that so many people miss. I think when people are in financial trouble and people tell them, well, you know, what you need to do is take a second job or cut back on these things that you love, maybe sell your second car for a while or cut out your cell phone. People think this is a life sentence and they're going to have to live this way forever. But it's not forever. Right. It's just until you accomplish whatever that goal is that you're trying to get done, whether it's getting out of debt or sending your kids to college or whatever. This buckling down, yeah, sure, it might take 6 months or a year or even 2 or 3 years, but it's not a life sentence. And if you can get out of that bad situation, you'll be so much happier than just lingering in it.
Well, you know, it was cool. The whole time I was out there delivering papers on your point, my subconscious mind was working on how the hell can I not do this anymore? Right?
Exactly.
So I started hitting my boss up all the time for a raise just because I did not want to do that anymore. And I think that's what it takes. I mean, you give your brain a job and it will do that job. And I think that that process of buckling down and saying, you know what, I'm going to do the crappy thing for a while.
Well, to me, there's always an analogy with fitness. I mean, I feel like fitness and finance, they're pretty well aligned. They're not. It's not a perfect alignment. I need to lose some weight. Road trip that I've been on around the United States, I've been drinking and eating my way across the country and just enjoying whatever it is I want to enjoy. And as a result, I've gained 20 pounds.
Wow.
And I don't like the way I look. Kim doesn't like the way I look. Nobody likes the way I look. So I realized that in order to be back in a happy place, I've just got to say, you know, for the 3 months that we're staying here in Savannah still, every day I've got to put in an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours of intense activity. And reduce my food and alcohol intake. And it's going to suck. These 3 months are going to suck. I have no illusions that they're going to be good. But it's okay. I know that in the end, I'll be back on the road and I'm happy with where I am.
I think our lessons from these two articles are, number one, when it comes to all of this chatter about sell all your stuff right now, sell, 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 JD. I think you should maybe cool your jets and start with your financial plan. And then news from David Bowie, think creatively.
Absolutely.
And don't be around JD for the next 3 months because he's probably going to be a little frustrating to be around and angry.
Yeah, I get a little grouchy, you know, when I'm not having enough food to eat.
When did you start thinking about college?
You know, that's a good question. I think I started thinking about in junior high. No, my mom had gone to college for like a semester, but nobody else in my family had. So I realized I didn't want to be and do what my parents were and were doing. And so I thought, you know, college is the only way out of it. And I also knew that they couldn't afford to send me there. So I was going to have to get scholarships. So I knew going into high school that I was going to have to put myself through college. And the best way to do that was scholarships.
My parents said the same thing. They said, and they hadn't gone to college. And they said, you know what? You're going to have to find a way, pay your own way through. And you know what I did with that information? Absolutely nothing.
I think that's what most people do.
Yeah. So how cool is it? Preston Silverman, his company Raise.me. Here's an exciting idea. What if kids earn scholarships a little bit at a time during high school based on activities they complete? Maybe you do an after school activity. You get a $25 micro scholarship. Maybe then you get $50 more. Would kids then more actively learn about college? I don't know. Bill and Melinda Gates thinks so. The Gates Foundation is one backer of Raise.me. Founder Preston Silverman, JD, waiting upstairs.
Excellent. Bring him on down.
Yeah, let's talk to him. Preston Silverman coming down to the basement. Well, have a seat, Preston. Preston Silverman from Raise.me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me, Joe.
Well, what type of a student were you? Because whenever anybody has anything education related, I wonder if this would have been a way for you to get more scholarships or if you're some guy that saw a need and you were a fantastic student.
It's a good question. I would have appreciated Raise when I was in high school, certainly. I did work hard and did well in high school.
Did you find, though, that was it kids around you that weren't paying much attention to college, or where was the need that you were trying to address?
That was part of it. Another part of it was just a total lack of clarity and understanding how to access scholarships and where they were. And I found it really frustrating that you don't find out about scholarships until after you've already applied to a college. And so I, like a lot of students, were intimidated by the list price of a lot of colleges, especially private colleges, didn't really understand that there could be financial aid and scholarships available to me.
We were talking about that on Monday with Brad Baldridge from Taming the Higher Cost of College. Just the fact, Preston, that you know, when kids are out doing the college search, they have no idea how much money they're coming in with. And like you said, when you're looking at a college that's maybe $40,000 a year, parents are saying, how the heck am I going to be able to afford that?
Certainly. It's a really big problem.
So how did you get the attention of the Gates Foundation?
We applied. They had an open call for applications for a competitive grant competition, essentially, that they were doing called the College Knowledge Challenge. And they opened it up to applications from all over the country. And we sent one in and were very fortunate to win.
That must have been a happy dance day.
It was. We did a lot of dance.
Well, let's talk about Raise.me and what you guys do, because this is pretty exciting. So I'm the average high school student. What happens?
You can sign up for Raise anytime in high school. And what you're able to see are a variety of different ways that you can earn what we call micro scholarships. They're these small scholarship chunks that you can earn all throughout high school based on your individual progress and accomplishment. So each time you get an A in a course or take on a leadership role or lead a community service project, you're able to unlock micro scholarships from over 100 different colleges and universities across the country now. And that builds up as you go. And eventually you're able to redeem them when you apply and are admitted and matriculate to college.
Tell me what some of the things are that I might get a micro scholarship for, because I was surprised by two things, Preston. I was surprised by how wide ranging they were. And also I was surprised by some of the dollar numbers. I mean, when you're talking micro scholarships, you're talking about just building, you know, I guess eating an elephant one piece at a time.
Yes. We call them micro scholarships, but in reality, the size can be quite large. Students can earn up to $80,000 through Raise even before they apply to college. So it does add up quite quickly. And the individual ticket size, so to speak, can be anywhere from, you know, $100 to $1,000, depending on the accomplishment of the student. The different things are set by all our college and university partners. So you'll see they award for more traditional types of measures of academic success, like getting good grades or doing well on standardized tests like the ACT or the SAT. They also have micro scholarships for taking more rigorous courses, whether it's an AP course or calculus while you're in high school. They also have a lot of micro scholarships available for extracurricular type of activities. Taking on a leadership role in student government or being in the robotics club at your high school. So there's a huge range of different things that colleges and universities are awarding for, and each program is tailored to their college and the types of things that they're looking for in applicants and that they think students should be focused on in high school to become better prepared for college. So many students think it also gives them insight into what the colleges and universities really care about in their application process.
I think that's important. I mean, did it surprise you that extracurricular activities were things that schools wanted to reward during high school, or did you expect that going in?
It has been surprising the extent to which it's been important. I mean, I always had heard that colleges and universities valued well-rounded students that were engaged in their community. But understanding the extent to which that is true has been a little surprising.
Did you get, when you first started RAISE, was there pushback from schools? Was there immediate acceptance? Were schools on board? Did you have to convince them that this was a great way to recruit students? How did it start when you were first starting RAISE?
We had no idea what to expect, actually. And when we started having our first conversations, we were nervous because we'd heard that colleges and universities can be slow and bureaucratic.
Right.
And don't like to try new things. Those were some of the things we'd heard from people. And so we didn't really know what to expect. But when we started having conversations with leaders at different colleges and universities, we were really surprised and excited about the level of enthusiasm there was and how quickly they moved. And what we found was that many colleges and universities had seen this problem and been dealing with it for years and really understood that most of their scholarships and grants were being awarded today too late to impact students' ambitions about college and where they were choosing to apply, particularly students where the financial equation is going to be an important part of their decision. And so we were really excited by the enthusiasm with which the idea was greeted overall.
What about your other partners on the high school level? I mean, I'm assuming that you go, do you work individually with the high schools, or generally do kids just go to the RAISE website and sign up there?
Both. So any student in the country can go to raise.me and sign up themselves. But we also have a lot of high schools that are rolling out the program to all their students. And high schools are really excited about it because one, they want to help their students, of course, get into and pay for college. It also helps reinforce all the things they're telling their students are important. So it's not just a teacher saying, hey, it's important you do well in my class and get a good grade. They have the backing of these colleges and universities that are also validating that statement. And then the third thing is it helps just build a college going culture overall for their high school. So we do see a lot of high schools rolling it out to all their students for those reasons.
Yeah, no, the kids, my kids are juniors in college right now. And I know the high school that they went to here locally, I mean, they make a big deal of the percentage of kids that are going to college and how much money they got in scholarships. So I could imagine on that level for their purposes, it would be cool. Tell me about the germ of the idea. I just want to know, as a guy who created a show from my mom's basement, which might not have been the world's best idea, where were you when the idea for RAISE came into your head? What was going on in your life then, Preston?
I was actually teaching economics at a high school outside Bangalore.
I didn't expect
India.
That answer at all. I did not. That's a whole different way.
Yeah. I'd been invited to teach there out of the school between grad school and medical school. And he had always raved about the school and the students. And I'd always felt that at some point I'd love to go teach there. And, decided to go do it. And I was teaching juniors and seniors in high school. So we spent a fair amount of time talking about plans for after they graduated and going to college. And that gave me a chance to reflect on the process I'd gone through as well. And that was where the idea came from.
That's awesome. My son spent some time in India. Had you been there before you were teaching there ever?
I had. In a prior life, I worked as a strategy consultant focused on emerging markets. So I'd spent a fair amount of time traveling throughout Asia and working in India and China and Southeast Asia.
Wow, that's great. Bones of this, if people go to raise.me, how much does it cost to get enrolled in your program?
It's absolutely free for students and for high schools that want to roll it out to their students. We charge the colleges and universities and other sponsors a fee to build and manage their scholarship programs on RAISE.
What's the sign-up process like? What do I do? And then how do I interface with RAISE? Is it an app? Is it just on my PC? How does it work?
It's a web app. So you can access it through the web browser at www.raise.me. on your desktop computer or a mobile phone. And you go through a quick sign-up process that asks a little bit of information about you and where you are. And that's important because different colleges and universities have different programs available to students living in different states. For instance, a public school, their program may only be available to students in their state. So that's why we ask that information. And then once you go through that sign-up process, you're able to see all the different types of microscholarships you can earn, and you earn them by adding your accomplishments and achievements to a portfolio. So students are able to add the courses and grades and activities they've done. And as they add those things, they instantly unlock the microscholarships from different colleges and universities across the country. So you add that A you got in algebra, and you know, you'll see instantly, congrats, based on that A in algebra you got last year, you unlocked microscholarships from these 50 different colleges and universities.
It's like you're building your resume.
It is. And a lot of students tell us they really appreciate that aspect of it, that it's a good way for them to also just keep track of the things that they're doing in high school, so that when they get to their senior year and they're doing the application process, they're able to look back and see, you know, oh yeah, you know, I led that community service project, or I did that club as well. So it's a good way to just stay organized.
Even though Raise isn't very old, you have to get excited about some of the success stories, I'm sure, that you've already had. Tell me more about early engagement. How, Preston, have you changed some kids' lives so far?
We've gotten tremendous feedback from students all over the country, and that's been really exciting, about how it changed their perspective about what was possible. And that's the entire goal. So we've been really excited to see that. But, you know, we have over 50% of the students on Raise are coming from low-income backgrounds or first-generation college students. And they found it really helpful to understand, here are the things that they can be doing to become better prepared for college while they're still in high school, and to understand that they're going to have this amount of financial aid available to them when they do the application process.
Beyond continuing to roll this out on a bigger and wider scale, what's next for you guys? Well, what's exciting you when you wake up today, Preston?
You know, we are still very much focused on just how do we reach more students and families and let them know about this opportunity. How do we partner with more colleges and universities to create more opportunities for students? We've also started to receive inquiries from corporations and foundations who are interested in creating micro scholarship programs for students that are transferable across different colleges and universities. So that's another area we're excited to explore and potentially launch in the future.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, thanks for hanging out with us for a few minutes, man.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Hey everyone, I'm taking a quick break from my Trudeau Culinary School curriculum to bring you your daily dose of trivia. First thing I got to figure out when I'm studying is it pronounced culinary or culinary? I'm happy for the break anyway. Who knew cutting carrots would be such a grind? So here it goes. We've talked college all week, and here's a question for you. Only including tuition and fees, what's the average cost of a year of college at in-state public colleges in the USA? I'll be back with the answer after I work on the onions.
Hey, Stackers, it's time in the show for us to help you solve your money problems. First of all, if you're somebody with a bunch of credit card debt, you've got to change that behavior. Let's work on changing it. The first thing we have to do is get open. And we asked Nick Clement, the CEO of Magnify Money, head to stackingbenjamins.com/Magnify Money to reach them. Why people don't talk about their credit card debt.
I know. I wish we would. If you remember when you're in school and you look left and you look right, and one of these people will. Well, one of these people will have credit card debt, and it probably will be you at some point in your life. And because we don't talk about it, because we're so ashamed, we're so embarrassed, what we end up doing is nothing. We stay put. We don't come up with a plan to get out of it. We don't negotiate better deals and refinance. And so it just becomes this horrible, quiet problem that can make someone feel awful. You shouldn't be ashamed. Almost, one out of two people have it. Speak up. And only when you talk about it and deal with it can you get out of the problem.
So of course we don't talk about it, but you know what? If you don't hold yourself accountable, you'll get nowhere. Then once you decide that it's time to make things better, head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money for not just better credit card options with 0% interest rates to help surf your debt to lower rate, but also for better savings accounts and checking accounts. And if the change you're trying to create in your life is to buy a new home and you've got a high credit score, guess where you should go? StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. And as we've talked about before, you go to SoFi because of their incredibly low rates and their easy system of getting approved for loans. You'll know in most cases within 10 minutes. But we asked Dan Macklin exactly what types of loans they have on mortgages.
SoFi offers a 30-year fixed and a 15-year fixed and a 7-1 adjustable rate mortgage. The key difference with our mortgages is we require as little as 10% down payment on those mortgages. So you may only have 10% of the purchase price, and that can be good enough for SoFi. And importantly, we don't charge any mortgage insurance. So for many people who haven't yet saved up a huge down payment, we're a great option.
StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi, S-O-F-I. When your change in your life is either a new house, refinancing student loans, or taking out a personal loan to get rid of debt.
Hey, trivia nerds. Man, cutting onions makes me so sad. I have no idea why, but, well, I well up every time that knife goes in. Maybe it's what I keep telling Joe's mom. I'm a lover, not a fighter, baby. So here's today's trivia segment. What's the average cost of a year of college at in-state public colleges in the USA? The answer? Well, according to the College Board, it's $9,410. New Hampshire has the most expensive in-state schools, while Wyoming's in-state colleges are the least expensive. Which state colleges have raised prices the most during the last 5 years? Well, that dubious honor goes to Louisiana, whose college prices have gone up a whopping 52%. How's that for inflation? Speaking of inflation, it's time for me to inflate some bike tires and head back to school. See ya!
To Preston Silverman from race.me for stopping by the basement. How cool is that? Micro scholarships. Do you think you would have paid more attention in high school than you did? I mean, you already said beforehand that you were a guy that paid attention to college some, but would you have been a little bit more critical of where you went to college if you knew that you were getting some of these micro scholarships?
I can't answer that question. I wish I could, but I don't have anything for you, Joe.
Yeah. I think just in general, it'll perk kids up earlier, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it'll get more kids interested. For me, I don't want to say I was driven, but I was very strategic about how I was going about things, and I knew what I needed to do and how to do it. Yeah. And so I had a plan.
And in that instance, Preston's audience isn't you.
Right. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Right. Yep. It's the kid that's at risk. But thanks for coming down. We'll have all of his links in the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. You guys have been nice enough to send us letters. We have gotten a few voicemails. We have to wait for OG on these particular voicemails.
Are the voicemails nice too?
The voicemails are not, believe it or not. People aren't even mean on voicemail. We gave people the option of doing voicemail. I thought this is going to be a train wreck because I'm going to hear some stuff. But people have been very nice. Even the Alabama fans have been nice to me, a Michigan State guy. But we got some great letters. First letter comes to us from Julie. Julie says, Dear Joe, she was listening to the podcast from yesterday. And at the time she sent this, JD, we had Willie Jolly on, turning setbacks into greenbacks.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, fantastic motivational speaker. And he was talking about making your goals specific, right? Mm-hmm. So what do we get? I get a smart ass comment from Julie here listening to podcasts, and she thought she'd share her New Year's resolution. She plans to find or develop a process that'll help her improve her life by improving her habits. Is that vague enough?
It's vague, but it's the right idea.
I told her it's nearly as good as mine, which is I hope to run a little more and maybe eat a little better.
Is that you run a lot, right?
I do. I run every day. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But I got to be more intentional, you know, instead of just strapping on the shoes and going out on a run. I should follow some plan, maybe. Call me crazy.
Maybe.
Yeah. So when you're losing weight here, you're like, yeah, I might just, is it pretty nebulous? Or are you taking Noah Kagan and I'm going to be down 2 pounds every day? Or?
Well, no, I'm not that precise. You know, a lot of times when I do my stuff, whether it's losing weight or starting a blog or whatever it is, I keep spreadsheets. I keep meticulous records of what I'm doing so I can see what my progress is. This time around, I'm taking a more passive approach. The numbers are still getting tracked, but I bought an Apple Watch. And I was talking with Matt Giovannisi, actually. He's the one who suggested I do this. I was going to buy, there's the brand that's very popular right now. I can't remember the name. Kim has one.
But oh, the TomTom or Garmin?
It's not the Garmin. It doesn't matter.
Fitbit.
Fitbit. That's the
Bam.
One. Bam. So Kim got a Fitbit. I was going to get a Fitbit. I actually bought a Garmin. But, you know, it cost a few $100s. And I got to thinking, well, I'm an Apple nerd. Maybe the Apple Watch. I'd been dissing on the Apple Watch. But I'd seen our friend Matt Giovannisi had been wearing one. And I asked him about it. I said, hey, do you use that for fitness? He says, that's all I use it for. I was like, oh, turned the Garmin, got the Apple Watch. And sure enough, that thing tracks all sorts of stuff. And so it's tracking my numbers passively for me. And so my current plan, what I do is at the condo here in Savannah, Georgia, which smells like your mom's basement, I go down to the fitness room and I ride the recumbent bicycle for 90 minutes at a time while I have my iPad in front of me. And this is how much of a nerd I am. I'm playing Hearthstone, this card game.
Are you really?
Yeah. So I'm biking my heart out for 90 minutes and I'm sweating like a pig. But I don't even care because I'm in nerd heaven.
Absolutely.
And I burned like 900 calories just before I got on here.
When I was a financial advisor, my assistant's husband was a GM guide. In his particular job, he didn't get to walk very much. So mm-hmm. he would, when he came home and they were watching television at night, he would have the machine going and he would walk the entire time they watched a couple hours of TV together.
So he had his treadmill next to her easy chair.
Literally behind it. Like he sat behind her, which I thought was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
You know, you hear this the whole time you're watching TV. But you know how much weight he lost in a year? I mean, just it was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you can kind of reward yourself at the same time you're doing the difficult thing, it's awesome. Yeah. You don't even realize you're doing a difficult thing.
That's great. So, Julie, that is passive enough and it is vague enough. So good for you. She gets to go on mom's fridge, JD, for doing nothing. That's great. Right. Next question comes to us from Nathan. Hey, Joe, we're on a debt payoff plan. I just saw your Save 50 course. That's save50.org, the course that Kathleen created. Do you count paying off student loans as Save 50 as long as we put that money towards savings after we're finished and don't have lifestyle inflation? I'm going to guess that buying a brand new boat is the best investment. You see our listeners, JD?
They're right in there with you.
Total smart asses. Just completely. I'm going to guess buying a brand new boat's the best investment that we could make after we're done paying off student loans. I think OG agreed with me on this. Seriously, what could go wrong if you include our debt payoff amount plus saving? We're at 50% right now. Nice job, Nathan. So you're big into saving half your income, that whole Absolutely. Thing too. Do you count paying off loans as saving money?
Yeah, absolutely I do. So to me, debt repayment is a form of savings. Absolutely. For a while, I didn't understand this. I wasn't on board with it. But then I was reading, what's the book? It's All Your Worth by Elizabeth Warren and her daughter, which is Amelia Warren Tiagi or something like
yes.
that. Anyway, in there, they advocate this budget and they want you to spend no more than 50% of your income on needs to save at least 20%. And then you've got all the rest left over to spend. I think it's a great formula. They call it the balanced money formula, but I'm now on board with the save half thing. I agree with Kathleen. Let's save 50%. And Elizabeth Warren says, yes, debt repayment is a form of saving. And I agree with her. You've got to do that before you can actually save. It's the same principle. And yeah.
Yeah, Nathan, as long as you're not taking out new debt, right? You pay off the loan. You know, I mean, I went through this in college where I would pay off my credit card, $300, and then $300 more beer would go back on there, right?
$300 of beer.
I mean, I'm just throwing that out. That might be more today. Joking. But if you're using that card again or you're using the debt again, it doesn't count. It's only debt repayment that sticks. And you probably need to take out the interest that you're paying too, right? Because that's going to somebody else. That's not saving. I mean,
yeah, to me, that all gets a little fussy. I'm having repaid debt before.
Yeah.
I know how easy it is to get mired down in all the details. When you get mired down in the details, you don't actually do a damn thing. And so for me, I think it's important to keep things on this big global framework level. And you know, my motto at Get Rich Slowly was always do what works for you. And I would say that applies here too.
Yeah.
Paying the interest, debt repayment is all pretty much the same thing. So if you want to count that as savings, go ahead. If you want to count paying the interest as something else, count, keep it simple.
Yeah. I would keep it simple, but by the same token, I would even make it, you know, the hard part for me about doing something as crazy as saving 50 is a lot of people try to do that by hand. And they also try to do it based on being excited. But, you know, excitement toward anything lasts. It's transitory, right?
Absolutely.
So you got to create these systems to make everything automatic. So you're like automatically saving 50. I love like doing direct deposit directly into your savings account instead of a checking account. Because if it goes to my checking account, my brain thinks that's money I can spend. Where if it's in a savings account, I'm like, well, I don't want to transfer it over to checking because it's already saved. You know, so I'm tricking myself, right? And all the cool apps that are out now too, different than when you and I old guys were kids. I mean, look at how easy it is today to use something like Digit or, you know, Robinhood or, you know, Magnify Money, where I just go on a website and just, bloop, oh, there's a number one checking account. Great.
Yeah.
None of that. These kids got it easy, JD.
But for me, I think you hit on something very important, Joey. It's important to create barriers. I wrote about this recently at Money Boss, actually, the importance of creating barriers between you and bad behavior. And by separating your money, depositing your paychecks into the savings account, which is separate from your checking account, that's just one way of doing it.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. But they do, but you miss my bigger point. Kids got it easy today.
Oh, come on. That's right. Hell yeah, they do.
We got to do the old guy routine, right? Back when I was these damn millennials' age, I was walking uphill with no shoes to the bank.
We didn't have the internet back in those days.
Barely have banking. Our third question comes to us from Cassie Ray. Cassie Ray says, love, all capitals, the Stacky Benjamin Show. She says she has a really basic and silly question mark. There is no such thing, Cassie, as a silly question. I don't know if she's actually heard the show. She thinks she's asking a silly question. The whole show, the premise is kind of silly for the Stacky Benjamin Show. She's building an emergency fund of $1,000. How accessible should that money be? Should she be carrying an ATM Visa check card with that amount at all times? Or is that something she could have in an account like her Smart Piggy account that takes a few days to process? She's worse than bad with money, never had an emergency fund until now, and she's not sure how accessible that money should be on a day-to-day basis. Thank you, Cassie. Well, guess what, Cassie? We're not going to trust that with OG and I. We're going to ask the man here. JD, what does Cassie do?
Well, I think Cassie answered the question herself. I mean, if she's worse than bad with money, then absolutely. I used to be in that same place, and that's when I learned to create these barriers that I was just talking about. So for me, back when I was worse than bad with money and I was trying to establish my emergency fund, what I did is I had my checking account at a national bank, and then I went down to a local credit union and I opened up a different savings account there. And that's where I put all my money. So I took my emergency fund was in this savings account and it was in the credit union.
No debit card access.
They gave me a debit card. I cut it up.
Yeah, right.
It's just, I didn't want it. And so if I wanted to transfer money between the two, back when I did this, the internets did exist, actually. And so I could have done it by the internet. But there were these barriers. I created barriers between me and bad behavior. And I made myself go deposit my money into that savings account. But if I wanted to access it, I also had to go down and do it. I never would let myself do that. That would be crossing the line.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for her, if she's worse than bad with money.
It was going to be like
she can to keep them separate.
It was going to be like the 5 a.m. walk of shame down to the credit union.
Exactly.
To get your money.
Oh, man. But, you know, the thing is, it worked. And it worked for a long time. And eventually, I just had all of the money that I was earning being deposited into the savings account. And once I got better with money, I created like an automatic transfer each month from the savings account to the checking account. And then once I got so that, oh, I realized I could handle it, I gained some financial confidence, then I just merged everything into the credit union. And I haven't had a problem since.
Hey, if you've got a note for us, way to go to the head of the class is by our voicemail, stackingbenjamins.com/voicemail. Send a voicemail to OG and I, or drop us a note, joe@stackingbenjamins.com. And you remember, for those of you that have been listening to us for a while, how backlogged we were, and we had those back-to-back episodes in December. We can get your note on fairly quickly now. But for a while there, JD, we had people waiting like 6 weeks. They'd already made the decision long before.
Exactly.
They heard our answer.
What did you do? You did two back-to-back episodes?
We did.
Just answered email?
Just cranked them out. And it was fun. Yeah. I mean, this is always a blast. So send us a note, joe@stackingbenjamins.com. that's it, man. How easy was that, huh?
That was easy. That was fun, too.
You got to write to OG and tell him, just say, you've got the cushiest job in America.
You just have to sit here and make Joe look good.
I know. How great is that?
Or sound good.
I don't know. We still haven't figured that out, but we're on our way. So it's a part of the show, for those people new to the show, and for you, JD, where we talk about what did we learn today? And of course, Preston Silverman, with a lot of lessons with Raise.me and about attracting kids to go to school at a younger age. But besides that, what's your big takeaway from today's show?
I think my big takeaway actually goes back to the David Bowie stuff and the importance of being creative with money. I mean, don't just accept your situation. If you've got a financial problem, sit down and get creative, brainstorm solutions, figure out ways you can solve it. And then once you've figured out ways to solve it, put those ideas into practice. See if you can't make it happen.
Yeah, mine is very similar to yours. I like your idea of barriers. I love the idea of barriers because I see too many people, especially this time of year, that are so excited about their money and they don't use that to make sure that they have systems in place when they're not excited anymore. And those systems of I've got the money at the credit union, I cut up my debit card, I can't get at it very easily and I have to do the walk of shame to get it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And there's so much cool stuff out there that you can access.
And you know, the converse, real quick, the converse is, so barriers are pre-committing to keeping yourself from bad behavior. But you can also pre-commit to good behavior. And that's where you automate your investing and so on. Right. I think just automating good behavior and creating barriers to bad, two sides of the same coin, both very important.
I'm going to link to that article too in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com so people got it. So what's coming up next on Money Boss?
Well, that's a great question. Right now, I've been interviewing people who are financially independent and asking them, okay, now that you're financially independent, what next? What do you do after you have all the money that you need in order to keep your current lifestyle? What do you do? And so I'm curious to see what people's responses are, and it'd be interesting to see how that article turns out.
I'm interested in that the same way I'm interested in people whose goal is to get out of debt. And a big problem I see is probably the same problem that you're seeing, is that once people clear that hurdle, they never think about the next side, right? So I see people that get out of debt and then they get right back into debt because they don't have any goal with that money anymore.
Well, and you know what I've realized? I've started preaching this at Money Boss. I hadn't formulated this idea, get rich slowly, but getting out of debt should not be a goal. Getting out of debt is a side effect. It's a side effect of doing other things,
right?
Putting other systems into place that help you pursue other goals. A side effect is you're going to get out of debt.
And I'm laughing because I feel like a lot of people where it's like, okay, I did all these systems to get out of debt. And now that I'm out of debt, I'm not going to do any of those anymore because those worked, yeah. You know, because those were way too effective for me to continue doing.
Well, I think what they should do is once you're out of debt, move on, do Kathleen's course, do the Save 50. Yeah. I mean, absolutely, because that's the next step, is to pursue saving half your income. And then from there, going on to financial independence. It's all just a progression. You know, I just wrote a post on the 6 stages of financial freedom, and it starts with dependence on your parents, that kind of all flows together all the way up until financial independence. It's all a continuum, I guess.
Yeah, that's exciting. We will link to that and to Money Boss. Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was awesome.
It was fun. You are way more fun than OG. And plus, I get to see your face instead of the paper bag. So
that's right.
Hey, coming up on Friday, everybody, Rob Berger from Dough Roller joining in the roundtable with Paula Pant and Greg McFarlane. You know Rob.
And Paula.
And yes.
These are awesome people.
I know about that. So they're going to end up our education week talking about 3 articles discussing kind of the same topics we talked about here today and on Monday with Brad Baldridge. So we'll see everybody back here on Friday. Stacking More Benjamins.
This show is the property of the Free Financial Advisor, LLC, copyright 2016. It's created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Brent Selmans, and edited by Isabella Bianca. J.D. Roth appears courtesy of MoneyBoss.com. Thanks, J.D., for making the place seem finally respectable. You'll find Preston Silverman hard at work helping kids get micro scholarships. Check out his site, Raise.me. Special thanks to Joe's mom for framing my diploma from Bahamas Central State College and Technical Institute. Now, with my culinary and alchemy degrees, finding a job should be easy. Maybe McDonald's would hire me to turn the sad sandwiches into gold. This is soon-to-be big-time chef and doctor of alchemy, Joe's mom's neighbor Doug, saying, we'll see you back here Friday with Rob Berger from Dough Roller and the Dough Roller Podcast. You know, Joe, I really thought doing these credits completely naked would have been a lot more fun than it actually was.
So your girlfriend, who you've been traveling with around the country. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I met her at FinCon, and Kim is way cooler than you are. I have no idea. No idea what she's doing with you.
She said to say hi because she thought you were awesome.
I have no idea what she's doing with you, man. I was like, really? Her and JD? What's that all about?
I got her hoodwinked. Shh.
That's right. It is our secret. Luckily, nobody listens to the show, so we're good there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she has an online business selling something that, because this is a family show, we'll call electric toothbrushes.
Electric toothbrushes, right.
Like you turn them on and they make a...
Exactly, noise. Exactly.
Yeah,
you may or may not use them on your teeth.
And you have one here.
Yes. So, you know, she doesn't actually... Well, she has been selling these online, but she's taking an online course from Steve Chu, who writes at My Wife Quit Her Job.
Steve was just on the show last week.
Excellent. And so she's taken his course and loves it and is learning how to create an online business. And as part of that, she imported from China, like, I don't know, 10, 15 different things, including these electronic toothbrushes. This one is called the Lovey Dovey Wave Vibe. That's the name of this toothbrush from a company called Aphrodisia. And she's been selling these on Amazon. And also, that's a female toothbrush.
Four out of five dentists recommend it.
Exactly. And I don't even know what this is, but it's for men.
It's like an egg.
It is.
It looks like an egg. What's it called? It says egg.
Egg. It says it's the egg. I don't know.
The egg.
It's an egg-shaped toothbrush for men.
Yeah. What's a guy going to do with that? I mean, how do you brush your teeth with that?
I have no idea. I guess you're going to brush something else. So she's been experimented trying to sell that stuff, but there's too much competition. So she's moving in another direction.
Is there really too much competition?
Yeah.
I had a guy as a client who worked for a company, and he worked in a huge warehouse. There was the owner, and then there was him. He was the general manager. They made toys, if you know what I mean. Toys similar to electric toothbrushes. It was a toy company. And you know what was funny? This is the hypocrisy of this whole thing. They not only made toys, but that wasn't their original pursuit. They were also making religious items for churches.
Oh, come on. There's no hypocrisy.
Two sides of the same company.
People need fun, too.
They do. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. So did you volunteer with Kim to, like, try out some of the toothbrushes?
I did, but she says that we can't touch the merchandise. So,
well, that's a bummer. Is that just an excuse, or is that...
My teeth have not been cleaned.
So what do you do? I mean, when she brings home the scotch tonight, do you guys have... couple of glasses of scotch to see how the toothbrushing could go after that?
You never know. You never know where it's going to go.
That whole analogy. Hey, so there's one more thing that you and I have to do. We have to do this.
All right.
All right. I saw Mad Max.
The first one?
You said no, pal.
That's a good movie. The first one's pretty good. Second one's good too.
The third one, not so much, actually.
Yeah, I know.
I'm with you on that one. Beyond Thunderdome is... So that was the third one, right? Beyond Thunderdome?
Yeah.
Not so much. Tina Turner? Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
But still not that. All right. So the reboot, critically acclaimed.
Yeah. It's like 98% approval.
Hold on a sec. You and I think saw it on the same day. And I think we did because I come home. I am all flipping excited about this. And all I get is this rant from J.D. Roth about how bad this movie sucked. Horrible it was. It's getting all kinds of, do you understand the critical acclaim?
I understand that it exists.
The critical acclaim.
I don't know why. I have no idea why. The thing is a mess.
Why don't you like it?
Joe, last night, I rewatched the entire movie.
That's a true friend.
And you know what? I will say that once I turned on the subtitles, maybe it's because I'm 46 and old, but the subtitles helped some. I mean,
I got you by a year, dude, and I did just fine.
But it didn't fix the nonsensical plot and the plot holes. And
it's an action movie. It's an action movie.
That doesn't mean they can be shitty. Action movies could be good. Action movies don't have to be crap.
Here's what I like. Let me tell you what I like.
This is what I want to hear.
Yeah, then you tell me why I'm wrong. Because here's the thing. Action movies, for me, I'm not a big action movie fan. OG is, I don't like it very much.
I like them.
They generally have a very simple plot. Mm-hmm. They usually have a very simple structure. Early on in the movie starts right in the middle of some action. I have no idea what's going on, and I'm trying to figure it out. My brain likes that, right? Okay, what the heck's going on?
In media res is what it's called in literature when you're writing stories.
Okay.
Yeah,
so I'm right there. But then within 15 minutes, I am worried about the fourth most important thing going on in the scene. As the person watching it, I'm worried about the fourth most important thing, which is there is this dude, Tom Hardy, right? Mad Max, who's on a pole. That's the fourth most important thing going on in the scene. The most important thing going on in the scene is that they are chasing Charlize Theron, who is escaping with the dude's wives. I mean, this isn't a spoiler.
His five wives, yeah.
Yeah, it's only 10 minutes in the movie that you figure this out, so there's no real spoilers here. And not only is she escaping, but she's going into a storm, which is the second most important thing, where we learn early on they could all die, right? So there's the threat that they could all die. There's the mission of they have to get this thing. Tom Hardy's not interested in any of that. He's been taken captive. The third most important thing is the dude who's driving this car that he's on is supporting the main dude to go get it. That's the third most important thing. His job is to supply blood to the dude driving the car. And Carter, every scene had four layers of action. I like that. I love that. I love the fact that it was an action movie that layered action upon action. The second thing I really liked.
All right.
I love a movie, and this would be a spoiler, so I'm not going to give it away, that is driving 1,000 miles an hour. And the cool thing is, like one critic I read said, he said, I would say I like the action scenes, but the whole movie's an action scene. The action never stops. It is an action scene.
It's constant.
Yes.
Which is fine.
But what I love, it's going 100,000 miles an hour, and it gets to halfway, and it completely stops. And then they do something that should be very logical and predictable, but I didn't see it coming in a million years. And then when I saw what they were going to have to do the second half of the movie, I laughed out loud. I'm like, that is so damn cool that they take something that's right in front of me the entire time and they go, yep, we got to do that. You know what I'm talking about?
I think you're talking about.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Everybody that can't see. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. And I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, my real issues with the I like frenetically paced movies, but this one was so frenetically paced that even the director couldn't follow it. He hired his wife as the editor and had her slow scenes down so people could follow it because it's too fast.
It is very fast.
Yes. And there are other things that I'm a story guy. I'm a writer and I don't want to nitpick things. And I try not to nitpick things. But if things are thrown in my face that don't make any sense, it's not me nitpicking. It's just they don't make sense.
What didn't make sense?
So like driving into the dust storm, they can't see a damn thing. How are they not driving into rocks and crevasses? I mean, they're having to dodge these things when there's no dust storm. Now all of a sudden they're in the dust storm and they can just keep going at 100 million miles an hour. I don't know. There's another scene where they're driving through a canyon and they blow up half the canyon to block the people behind them. And only one of the pursuers can come through. And we're meant to believe that somehow they go through the canyon again later, that somehow all this rubble has been cleared away, all these rocks. How is that even possible? It doesn't make sense to me.
You've never seen road crews?
I have seen road crews. That's why I say it doesn't make sense.
It would have had to have been a year and a half later.
Right. Exactly. Oh, my gosh. No, so, you know, I will admit that last night rewatching the movie, I liked it more than the first time. But that's not to say I liked it. Because and another thing to understand is I'm a huge Mad Max fan. And have been since I was a kid, because that's when I saw the original movies. So to me, this was disappointing.
You didn't like Tom Hardy's Mad Max?
I could see liking him. It's not him that I dislike. It was just the movie itself.
That's the other thing.
George Miller just came out today saying that he's not going to make another one. So
he isn't going to make another one.
No. And if this is any indication of the quality, then I'm fine.
That's fantastic.
I know I'm a lone voice in the wilderness because 98% of the population, 98% of the critics love this movie. I'm just not one of them.
Yeah, but you and I have been smack talking about this for a week, so it's great.
That's right.
I love that little dig there. That was good. What'd you think about Star Wars?
I loved it. I thought it was great. Again, I'm a big Star Wars fan too, and I have been hugely disappointed by the prequel trilogy. And so to see this, I really enjoyed it.
Is it frustrating, though, to have six coming out in the next 5 years? I mean, is it the fact that you know Disney's going to milk it, does that bother you at all?
Sort of. I linked to an article, I don't remember where it is now, about the changing structure of the Star Wars universe. And not just Star Wars, but just how movies are being produced and about how they are now franchises like this. And I'm okay with it because I can then pick and choose which Star Wars movies I'm going to go see.
Yeah.
And
the thing I like about Disney owning them is that when I go see a Marvel movie, I know it's going to be at least a 75, You know, there was the Fantastic Four, whatever. It was just horrible. Yeah,
crap.
Yeah. But by and large, like even Ant-Man, I'm like, who wants to go see Ant-Man? Then I went and saw it and I'm like, that was pretty good.
I haven't seen it yet. I should see it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. Not my favorite. My favorite so far was Guardians of the Galaxy.
You probably, yeah, that one's good.
Well, I thought you were going to say you hated that one too. That we're going to have to take off gloves again.
I did not hate Guardians of the Galaxy. I am not, however, an Avengers fan. But that's not so much about Avengers as it is about the writer whose name escapes me right now that everyone loves that I don't.
Joss Whedon?
Yes, I'm not a Joss Whedon fan.
You're not?
Oh my God, so overrated.
You didn't like, I think so too, which is funny. But I love Firefly. I thought Firefly was great.
No, that to me is the epitome of bad Joss Whedon.
Oh my God, you got to get out of the basement, dude.
It makes no sense.
Get the hell out of here.
Why are they wearing Western uniforms in space?
Because it's a Western. It is a Western.
It makes zero sense. The whole show. We just rewatched it on this trip, on the RV trip. We watched the whole thing. So, oh, man.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I never saw Buffy. See, like, that one might be fun.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Because Cheryl just got done. Now she's watching Angel. But she said that Buffy starts off great because it's so campy. It's awesome because it's so stupid and campy. And she's like, as Buffy went on, it got more and more dark and more serious. And she's like, I didn't like that nearly as much as the campy, where they're making just horrible jokes. Like, the writing is so bad, it's awesome, you know, but it's purposefully bad. So love that. Yeah. All right. Well, you're okay, but.
Excellent.
All right. Good luck brushing your teeth tonight.
Yeah, Kim just texted me. What did she say about the... Oh, very nice. So I've been very impressed with her since we got to Savannah. You know, you move to a new place, the inclination is it's going to be tough to find a job. She has basically created a market for herself here in Savannah. She's a dental hygienist.
Even though you're going to be here short term.
Yeah. We got here early October. She got licensed for dental hygiene, which is ironic that we're talking about toothbrushes. And she's basically gone around. She went knocking on doors, old school style, saying, hey, can I work for you? Can I work for you? And people have been calling her. And offices refer her to other offices. And so she's basically created this market for herself as a fill-in dental hygienist around Savannah, and people love her. And she just texted me to say that she got a full-time job for the rest of the time we're here. God. It's awesome.
How wild is that?
It is wild. I don't know, she's going to be so stressed for time.
I was going to say.